From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, is UFO disclosure close? Congratulations, by the way, to Alabama college football champs defeating Ohio State in this COVID era of sports. Here's what's happening. President Donald Trump has acknowledged that he bears some blame for the Capitol riot that last week during this conversation with House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy. The two sources apparently say McCarthy relayed the president's sentiment on a call with the House GOP conference. The riot left five people dead, including one Capitol police officer, in that tragedy. House Democrats introduced an impeachment resolution against President Trump on Monday for what they call incitement of an insurrection just days after the Capitol riot, saying he warrants impeachment, trial, and removal from office. He's only got eight more days in office. By the time they get all this together, it'll be over and he'll be gone. World Health Organization experts will begin their investigation in China into the origins of the coronavirus pandemic, but it is unclear at this time if they will visit Wuhan, where the virus apparently was first detected. The conservative social media network, it's called Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R, was forced offline Monday after Amazon warned the company would lose access in its servers for its failure to properly police violent content. Let's check in with our expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, what does this all mean with this company?
Well, what we're really dealing with are two interrelated issues, the First Amendment and the Communications Decency Act, Section 230. As you and I have discussed before, the First Amendment is widely misunderstood. In fact, it only applies to governmental actions against speech. Governmental. It does not apply to non-governmental firms or other organizations. So speaking now in general terms, not any specific case, these firms are permitted to determine who they wish to serve and under what conditions, and in particular, are permitted to make the determination that specific users or customers are leveraging the platforms for hate speech or speech that in the firm's view incites violence, and the firms are free to remove those users or customers from the firm's services. This has obviously become particularly acute in the issue, in the wake of the recent violence, of course. Now, we'll also recall that President Trump unsuccessfully tried to force Congress to revoke CDA, Communications Decency Act, Section 230. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about 230 as well. It applies in this case also. There seems to be a widespread belief that if 230 were eliminated, which is what President Trump wanted, anyone could say anything they wanted to on social media, and firms couldn't invoke terms of use policies to moderate or otherwise control it, or to tell a service that they couldn't operate, as in the company under discussion now. But in fact, the elimination of 230 would actually shut down vast amounts of speech of all kinds on the internet. Shut it down, because without the protections provided by 230, it would just be too risky for most firms to provide platforms for UGC, user-generated content, at all. So the entire concept of written, video, other content created by users, posts, comments, whatever, would almost certainly mostly be shut down or at least drastically curtailed. So rather than enhancing free speech, eliminating 230 would actually vastly reduce speech of all kinds on the internet. So the bottom line, especially with 230, is that it's really important to be careful what you wish for.
And why would Amazon be warning the network Parler?
Well, the issue here is that Amazon has that right, as I just discussed, to say, hey, we are only willing to be involved with certain content, certain companies that obey our terms of service. And usually, if you look at the terms of service of these firms, they will say that you're not permitted to have hate speech, violent speech, and such. So in this case, Amazon made the determination that they didn't want to continue doing business this way, and that is their right. That is their choice.
Sure. As Twitter dumped the president, same kind of thing.
And in fact, exactly the same issues are in play there. Twitter has policies against hate speech, violence posts that can trigger violence, all kinds of things like that. Now, the issue that across the board here that I have discussed many times before actually is whether or not the firms have been really applying those terms of service in a diligent way. And it can be argued that For example, President Trump has been on Twitter for a very, very long time, long before his presidency.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And Twitter has said that public figures had a special political public figures like national leaders and such had a special privilege that they could stay with their accounts. They wouldn't get tossed off for the kinds of posts that ordinary users would get tossed off for. But that's just a decision that Twitter has made. In this case, it appears that Twitter decided that this had gone too far in the wake of what occurred, and they decided that that special exemption no longer applied, and that's what led to what we've seen.
Thank you, Lauren. You add a great perspective to the program. The departure of SpaceX's Cargo Dragon from the International Space Station postponed because of weather in the splashdown zone off the east coast of Florida. What else is going on in the skies? It's time for Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hi, Stephen.
And hello there, George. We always begin with space, and here we go with another great space.
Let's do it.
Yeah, NASA's Space Launch System, known as the SLS rocket, is a super heavy-length rocket. It's an expendable launch vehicle, which when ready, George, to launch, will generate, get a little of this, some 8.8 million pounds of thrust. That's some 15% more thrust than the famous Saturn V rockets of the 1960s and 70s, making it the top thrust rocket in the world until another type is developed. When it's completed, it will stand some 365 feet tall and be powered by four RS-25 engines, fueled by liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen. This is a very big plus for NASA. And now a test of all four of these RS-25 rocket engines, George, is set for later this month, maybe on January the 17th, for an eight-minute test at a Mississippi test facility that NASA owns. NASA hopes to use the rocket, George, for the ambitious Artemis program, which calls for human landings on the moon that we've talked about before as early as 2024. That may be very optimistic, but NASA's new 2021 budget is some $23.3 billion. That's really small when you consider the other things that are in the federal budget, of which $850 million has been allocated to the Artemis human moon missions. George, we move rapidly to astronomy, and it appears that astronomers have confirmed that they've solved a 78-year-old mystery regarding something about our Milky Way galaxy in the 1950s. Astronomers detected a radio-emitting area, get a load of this, located above the northern region of the galactic center of the Milky Way, known as the North Polar Spur. Some astronomers, that is, thought that this was from a previous supernova explosion, but new data shows that this is to be from some other event which happened about 15 to 20 million years ago, and now they've detected a mirror image of this southern lobe, too. This is on top of the other previously known gamma-ray Fermi bubbles, making our Milky Way galaxy even more complicated. And the new confirmed lobes stand 45,000 light years, standing up and down below the center of the galaxy. We wrap it up with the live sky that everybody likes to look into the night sky, of course. A new moon, George, on the 13th, and the start of the new lunation number 1213. But here's something everybody should look for. Look low in the southwest at sunset, George, and we see the conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Mercury, all within about 3 degrees. And then if you can't find it that easy, wait for the crescent moon as it adds to the show on the evening of January the 14th. Another tip, Mars and the planet Uranus come within 1.6 degrees apart on the evening of the 20th. You can learn so much more about all the topics we've talked about by going to theskylive.com. Email me at drskyshow@gmail.com. Always simply remember what, George? Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies, as I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. We'll talk to you next week. They say that cheating on your diet can make your brain age faster, wipe out cognitive benefits, according to a study. This study shows that people who stick to the Mediterranean-type diet have brains which are 6 years younger than those who follow a traditional Western diet. Just remember that. In a moment, get off your sugar. Dr. Daryl Joffrey back with us. We're going to talk about ways that you can strengthen your eating habits next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Daryl Joffrey with us. Dr. Joffrey is a functional nutritionist, longevity expert who uses cutting-edge nutrition to help uncover the root causes of inflammation in your body. He's the founder of the Alkamine program, a former sugar addict himself turned health machine. He knows firsthand what it takes to overcome adversity and challenges to your health. Dr. Joffrey is a 19-year board-certified chiropractor and a certified raw food chef. Daryl, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, George. Happy New Year. It's so great to be on with you again.
Looking forward to this and a great book, Get Off Your Sugar. And you had the foreword by Kelly Ripa. How'd you pull that off?
Kelly's awesome. I've known her for years. She actually wrote the foreword of my first book, Get Off Your Acid, as well. And, you know, I've been coaching her, and she defines balance, and she lives this. She walks the walk. And, you know, when I wrote the book and I was thinking about who I wanted to write the foreword, there was no one else that that I wanted to. She was really the number one person because of who she is, how she lives it, and you know, overcoming her own issues with sugar craving. So it was very fitting, and I was very honored and privileged to have her write the foreword again.
And just in case people didn't hear you correctly, the book was called Get Off Your Acid, A-C-I-D, right?
Yes, exactly.
Perfect.
Get Off Your Acid.
Perfect. Well, tell me a little bit about you, because you're a chiropractor by trade. How did you get involved in all this nutritional end?
Yeah, I wasn't always into nutrition. You know, I've been in practice, you know, 21 years now. And back in the early days, you know, I was more of a straight chiropractor. Someone would come into my office, you know, I'd adjust them, they leave, they come back a week later. And I was kind of just doing that and not really getting much into nutrition. But, you know, my own skeleton in the closet was my sugar addiction, something that I was literally battling since as far back as I can remember. I mean, since I was 5 years old, as far as my memory goes back. And it was really just interesting because, you know, someone would come in and I would be saying, you know, you got to avoid the sugar, stop eating this. And then I would go in the back and I'd be the one eating a Caramello bar or a Nestle's Crunch bar.
Right.
I call myself the shoemaker with no shoes. You know, I was a walking contradiction. And, you know, as the years started gaining, so was my waistline, to the point that I was 42 pounds heavier than I was today.
Wow.
But, you know, I refused to buy bigger clothes, so I was literally leaning down to adjust one of my patients one day, and my pants split right down the backside. So needless to say, it was an embarrassing moment, and pain is a great motivator. So I managed to escape that adjustment without them noticing what had happened. Put on a different pair of slacks, but it was the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, and I realized that I had an issue that I was trying to beat by deprivation for so many years. And I'm going to tell you that deprivation just doesn't work. Now, there are a few people that can get to where they want to go by deprivation, but the problem is it's not sustainable. It's not a lifestyle, and you're truly not treating the underlying reasons why you crave sugar in the first place, the deficiencies. So I really just started to become a health investigator, and I would look at, you know, the 5% of the patients in my practice that would walk in. They had tons of energy. They had glowing skin. They were fit. You know, they slept well, all the good things that you really wanted on a regular basis. And then there was the rest of the crowd that I fit myself into, the other 95%, you know, the ones that kind of live that yo-yo syndrome. And I just started to look at this small group and say, what are they doing? What are they doing differently? You know, role modeling says success leaves clues, and it's true. And I literally just started adding a green juice into my diet because I started learning about the alkaline diet and how green juice is so powerful for your health, for your liver, for your blood. It cleanses, it detoxifies, and it alkalizes your body because it's got so many minerals. And it's interesting because I didn't really understand the mineral sugar connection then,
mm-hmm.
but within about 3 weeks, my cravings were gone. And it was simply from adding a couple of green juices, bouncing on a rebounder, you know, adding more greens into the diet. And, you know, at the time, I was strength eating, which I'm calling it now. And it's amazing. I mean, 3 weeks, a lifelong addiction to sugar, my cravings were gone. And in about 3.5 months, my body dropped 42 pounds. And the best part was I didn't do it by removing, by deprivation. And I think that's such an important thing to talk about now, this time of year, because here we are, January, you know, and everyone, you know, or most people set their New Year's resolutions on the 1st. But 4 days from now, on the 15th, the research shows that 92% of people are going to fail with their resolutions. And the reason
wow.
being is that it's most of us base those resolutions on deprivation. You know, I got to stop the sugar. I got to go to the gym. And again, you know, you might get you through the honeymoon phase those first couple of weeks, but it's not enough to sustain this as a lifestyle. So, you know, I just started to ditch that mindset. And with myself and the clients that I was coaching, I just started adding. And it might take a little bit longer, but here's the thing. It sticks. It lasts. And over time, the good will outweigh the bad. And that's kind of been my motto ever since. And that's the way I coach my clients and my patients. And it works really well. And they tend to appreciate it more because it's not really based on willpower. It's more based on just a slow ad, which is just much better for the psychology of the mind as well.
Daryl, how much sugar is too much?
Well, I mean, the World Health Organization says that you shouldn't be having more than 6 to 9 teaspoons. You know, you look at the average American consumes 130 pounds of sugar every single year. You know, the average adult consumes about 22 to 28 teaspoons. And children, this is crazy. I mean, I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old at home. The average child consumes 32 teaspoons of sugar a day.
32? My God.
Stress eating. Yeah, it's a huge issue.
Well, how much sugar is, let's say, in a cookie?
A cookie depends on the cookie, you know, and that's the thing is that you can have 10 different cookies in front of you. One can have no sugar, but it could be loaded with artificial sweeteners, you know, so that's the thing. I was with my family the other day up in Connecticut where my brother lives, and we went to this really cool store where they had all these different herbs and spices and teas and coffees, and my sister-in-law was looking at one of their products there. It was like an almond coconut butter that they made from scratch. And they were promoting it as this like really health food, and there was no sugar. So as I start to look at it and read the ingredients, there was like 10 ingredients on that list that you couldn't even pronounce. And I always say, if you can't pronounce it, you sure as heck can't digest it.
Don't eat it.
Exactly. So you got to really look at like what's on those labels. And, you know, the less ingredients, the better you can understand, the better. Because the reality is that you can have 10 different products and they can have all completely different sugar amounts. You know, some can have a huge amount, some can have none. But just because there's no sugar in there doesn't mean that it's a better option. Because, again, what a lot of these companies are doing now is that they're replacing the sugar because everybody's learning, wow, we know sugar is bad for you, and they're just swapping it with an artificial sweetener that's just as bad, probably even worse.
Why is sugar so bad for you overall?
Sugar is bad because it's acid. You know, we talked about that in the first book. Sugar is acidic. It's not even a food. I call this America's drug of choice. And acid equals inflammation. When you consume sugar, it metabolizes into something called lactic acid. And think about that just from a common sense standpoint. Acid is so corrosive, it could literally burn a hole through metal. So when you ingest these foods and metabolize them, think about what that's doing to your digestive system, the microbiome, to your cardiovascular system. It's mega inflammatory to your cardiovascular system. What about your brain? I mean, we're dealing now with dementia, Alzheimer's. I mean, growing up, I don't even remember Alzheimer's, but now there's some research showing it's the fourth cause of death. And what they're saying is that they're calling it type 3 diabetes, which is diabetes of the brain. It's insulin resistance of the brain.
And that's the worst. That's the worst you can get, I guess, isn't it?
That's the worst you can get. And Alzheimer's parallels inflammation. That's what we have to understand. And what's one of the primary causes of inflammation of the brain? It's sugar. You know, when you have too much sugar hanging around in your blood and your body, what happens is it latches onto protein. And that's another thing. Protein is an essential nutrient. We need it. But the average American is consuming 5 times the amount of protein. And here's the crazy thing. You could have no sugar in your diet at all, eating super clean. But if you're eating too much protein, it actually will turn to sugar in your body, in your liver, via a process called gluconeogenesis. So even something like eating too much protein can cause that. So if you have too much sugar hanging around and too much protein or too many unhealthy fats, the two basically latch together. And once they latch together, that can't be undone. It's like trying to unboil a hard-boiled egg. It's just you can't do it. And what happens is there's these like plaques, and they plaque in the brain. They plaque in your blood vessel wall, so they can cause dementia if it's in the brain. In your blood vessels, they can cause high blood pressure. In your kidneys, they can cause kidney stones. So again, it's just so acidic, it's inflammatory, and it ages us. It ages us prematurely. And, you know, leading into this, you talked about the Mediterranean diet, how it actually adds 6 years back to your life. That's what we call your biological age. So your chronological age is your true number. I'm 45. In my office here in New York City, we actually test people's biological age, which we call your epigenetic age. It's not about your genes. It's about what we call your epigenetics.
Sure.
It's really about your lifestyle choices. And you can really measure that. So, you know, we all are aging, but the question is are you aging faster than your true age, or are you turning back the clock on aging? And it all has to do whether you're stress eating or strength eating.
When we come back in a moment with Dr. Darrell, we are going to talk about his book, Get Off Your Sugar, which just came out. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Get Off Your Sugar. Dr. Darrell Joffrey with us. We're going to take calls with Dr. Darrell next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. If you've got a sugar addiction or you've gone through this process and gotten off sugar, check in with us. Let's get your story. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Darrell Joffrey with us. Darrell, what is your website?
The website is getoffyouracid.com.
Super. And you've got all your books listed there and things like that?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. Now, the old song, just a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. Is a spoonful of sugar bad for you?
Any sugar is bad for you. You know, the reality is that sugar is not an essential fuel like protein and fat is. The body doesn't need sugar. You know, there are some nutritionists and doctors will say that your body needs sugar, the brain needs sugar, and it's just not true. The brain will burn off the sugar first because it wants to get rid of it. But the body doesn't rely on sugar. In fact, your body's so smart. Like, what is sugar really designed for? It's for fight or flight. If you look at back at the caveman days, if there is a saber-toothed tiger, you don't want to be burning fat as your primary source of fuel because you'll be lunch for that tiger. You want to burn sugar because sugar will burn quickly, just like if I was to light up a tissue. It's gone. And then what happens is you can get out of danger, and then the body should be able to go back to its what we call metabolic flexibility, where it can choose to burn sugar or burn fat. In fact, there's five hormones in the body designed to actually mobilize and create sugar when you need it. There's only one hormone that will lower sugar, that's insulin. And insulin's not even a hormone to lower sugar. It's more of a transport hormone. It gets sugar, it gets basically energy into the cell. So the body really doesn't need sugar. We don't need it. We don't use it. It makes us inflamed. It makes us store fat in the body. And as I said before, it makes us age prematurely. So we got to ditch it. And listen, a little bit, it's not about saying you can't have it at all, but you can't make the sugar 90%, 80% of the diet. And I think that's the big takeaway.
That's really important, about balance.
Thing.
Absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about diabetes. Why is it so bad in terms of you could lose your legs, you could go blind? It's got all these afflictions tied into it. Why is it so bad?
Yeah, because there's associated neuropathies with diabetes, and that's what really causes those things that you just mentioned. You know, diabetes, you know, what a lot of the doctors are doing is they're looking to make that blood sugar number one number. So let's say they want it to be at 80 or whatever the number that they do. So they'll give you a medication. Now, the interesting thing about the medications that they give, every single diabetes medication except for one adds insulin into the body. Now, that's a big problem. Now, the goal is going to be achieved because it's going to stabilize your blood sugar. So every time you check your blood sugar or the doctor checks it, it's let's say, 80. All right, you're doing a great job. Keep on doing what you're doing. But the problem is the insulin resistance, which means too much insulin because you've had too much sugar over the years, that's the problem. So they're adding a drug that adds more insulin into the body. And the problem with insulin is that, number one, it's our fat-storing hormone. It makes your body retain fat, not just in the tissues, but also in the cardiovascular system. But it's also doing what we call cellular replication. In other words, it can increase your chances of getting cancer because you're dumping more insulin into the body. And there's so much research showing that the more insulin you dump into your blood over the course of your lifetime, it lessens your longevity, which means you die sooner. So, yes, you got to pay attention to the signs, but when there is diabetes or pre-diabetes, you have to go deeper down and really start to investigate what that underlying cause of. You know, you could just take a drug, have stable blood sugar, and keep on putting sugar into the body, but you didn't change the reason why it started in the first place. You got to start with the diet. It's not about the meds and supplements unless you're in a crisis situation. Listen, we have the best crisis care system in the world, but it's not a health care system. It's a sick care system. We have to go deeper and start to really clean up our diets. And once we do that and we move away from stress eating and start to put more of these nutritious, alkalizing, strengthening foods into the body, you're going to see everything start to change. So you start to add these things in and just go at your own pace. Let this fit into your lifestyle, not the other way around, because you want this thing to last for the long haul.
One of the popular diabetes medicines these days is metformin. Does that work well?
Yeah, listen, medications do work well. That's why they're so popular. You know, if you take a medication, it's going to do what it's designed to do. But the problem is, George, it's not addressing the underlying cause like I just mentioned. You know, it's like if I'm in my apartment here in New York City and there's a fire. What medications do is they basically get rid of the symptoms. So it's like snipping the wire to the alarm. So I'm sleeping in my apartment. I don't hear the alarm, but guess what? The fire's still raging in the body. And eventually that fire's going to take you out. So we have to think outside the box. We got to really go farther upstream and say, okay, why is this happening in our body? Why is that symptom happening? And by the time you get a symptom, we have to understand it's like a toothache. If someone wakes up with a toothache tomorrow morning, today their tooth felt fine. But was that tooth really healthy? No way. Dental research shows it takes at least 15 months of the stacking of all that dental decay to actually create that toothache. And when you feel that toothache, it's like the end. It's the body saying, hey, wake up. You got to do something or you're going to lose this tooth. It's no different with any other part of the body. The question is, are you listening? Are you paying attention to those warning signs that your body's giving you?
Now, when you say people are addicted to sugar, does that mean they're addicted to spoonfuls of sugar into their food, sprinkling it around, or are they addicted to donuts and candy and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because what you just said reminds me of myself. I've talked about this in Get Off Your Sugar. I remember growing up and I was eating Honey Nut Cheerios. It was one of my favorite breakfast cereals as a kid. And for every spoonful of Cheerios, I would literally have a spoonful of white sugar, 1-to-1 ratio.
Oh, no.
It was bad. That, by the way, that was just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, that's how bad my addiction was. But the thing is, that's not the sugar that is really taking people out. It's the sugar that snuck its way into the diet. It's the foods that people don't suspect, something like grains. I always say, you know, a lot of people have breakfast for dinner, but people are unknowingly having dessert for breakfast. You know, they're starting off their day with a Boston cream donut, a muffin, or a Danish, or they're having syrup or waffles, or they're having coffee loaded with sugar and fake creamer. Basically, people are having cake and a milkshake for breakfast.
But there's almost sugar in everything, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at grocery stores, 74% of the foods that you find, we can say quote-unquote foods that you find in there, have sugar in there. And here's where they get us, by the way. There's over 62 different names for sugar. So on a label, you're not going to really just see sugar anymore, because what happens under the other ingredients, whatever occupies that first space is the highest quantity of that ingredient. So what these manufacturers are doing very, very intelligently on their behalf, they're taking like five different names of sugar. So they're doing like maltose and sucrose and dextrose and maltodextrin, things that you wouldn't even possibly think is sugar. But when you add them all up, guess what's the number one ingredient? It's the sugar. So yes, it has snuck its way into our diet. It's hiding in so many of these so-called health foods. And I think those are the ones that are getting people, because even when people are making better choices, which I absolutely encourage, that's one of my mottos, it's good, better, best. So whatever you're doing with your food choices now, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just try to make that a better choice. And if you make that a better choice, you're going to make your body healthier. But again, when you have all these kind of hidden sources of sugar in there, it becomes hard for people. So just know this, anything that ends in os equals sugar. And sugar equals acid, and acid equals inflammation. So, you know, we got to become label readers and just, you know, start to really look at what's on the back of that label. And, you know, it's pretty interesting. We talk about that in the book, how to, in a very easy way, just decipher what the label means. But just start to look at, like, the key things, like what's the sugar level, what's the carb level, and then just start to read some of those names in there. And before you know it, you know, you'll understand what is in there and what shouldn't be in there.
How many grams of sugar a day is too much?
Well, again, like 6 to 9 teaspoons of sugar is that kind of zone where we want to be in.
But what would that be in terms of grams?
So grams would be 1 teaspoon equals 4 grams.
Okay.
So I kind of split up into 3 different zones, and this is really helpful for people that are looking to lose weight. I look at net carb number because that's really a number that people are learning more about, especially now with how popular the ketogenic diet is. So you really want to just make sure that if you're doing intermittent fasting or you're looking to really lose, let's say, 1 pound a day, you know, it's a pretty aggressive thing, but it's doable. You want to keep your net carbs under 50 grams per day, and it's doable. If you want to lose 1 to 2 pounds a week, then you want to aim to have that net carb fall in that zone of 50 to 100 grams. If you want to sustain a healthy weight that you're at right now and keep inflammation levels low, you want to be in that 100 to 150 grams. So those are the 3 zones. So under 50 grams, you're going to have accelerated fat burning. You're going to be getting into that ketogenic state where your body's burning fat for fuel, and that's like the key area for intermittent fasting. 50 to 100 grams, you're going to lose weight. It's going to be a little slower, but it's going to be a nice weight loss zone. You're going to be losing 1 to 2 pounds per week. And if you want a good maintenance zone, 100 to 150 grams. Once you go above that number, you're adding on the pounds. And just as important, you're adding more inflammation into your cells.
And you're not saying to people, eliminate sugar entirely. You're saying reduce it.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying that because even for me, when I was addicted to sugar, I tried that motto for so many times over. It got me 2 weeks, George. It got me 2 months. It never stuck. So, yes, you can do that, but I think the better approach is to start to add. Focus on, like, the positive. Focus on the good things. Like, these are the foods that I want to eat more of. So, you know, if you want to just add one thing, make it a green juice, you know, without the fruit. That's the key thing. Right, a lot of people will put fruit in green juices and smoothies, and that's loaded with sugar, loaded with fructose. Now, it's better than the refined sugar, but nonetheless, it's still sugar. So I always say, you know, start your morning with a green juice. It's so powerful. That's what I started with. And now if you're an overachiever, you can add more than that. But it's definitely not about deprivation. It doesn't work. I find that when you start to add, and you focus on that side, you focus on positive, not depriving, then your body's going to be more attuned to losing the weight. You're going to be sticking with this for longer. And I think it's just it's better for your mindset because you're not focused on, you know, on this is painful. This is something I have to remove. You know, for some people, they can do that. But most people, it just doesn't work in the long term.
I found during COVID, Daryl, that I've lost weight. I mean, eating less, I'm working out, but I've lost weight. And most people have gained, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, and congratulations, you know, seize the moment. It's what's been happening. There's so much uncertainty with COVID. You know, there's obviously so many bad things, but there were some silver linings in it and still are. You know, you got to think about it's been nearly a year since this thing's been going on. And when this happened, we were blindsided by this, right? I mean, no one knew that this thing was coming.
No, not like this.
Not like this. And what happened is, you know, especially here in the early, you know, in that March month here in New York City, it was pretty crazy. But what happened is that we had this quarantine slapped on us, and then what happened, most of us crawled into our foxholes, and we didn't come out. We started stress eating, and they even gave a name for it. They're calling it the COVID-19, the quarantine 15 in terms of the weight that people gained. But why did people gain weight? Because they were eating more sugar. They were stress eating. And it's interesting because the people like you, you know, that came into this who were eating healthy, who were managing their stress better, you know, they were exercising, had good mindset, they tended to fare a little bit better. So I think that's one of the big takeaways that I'm teaching a lot of my clients is anticipation is one of the most important things for everything in life, especially your health. I'm going to tell you that we're dealing with COVID-19 right now. We had the elections. We had the holidays. It was the perfect storm, right? But we don't know what the future stores for us. But what I can tell you is that there will be more stress. So here's my point. Let's be ready for it this time. Start now. Start today. Start in this moment. Start to do these things that we're talking about so that when it comes, your body, your mind will be ready to handle the stress that's thrown at it. Because the reality is it's not about the stress in your life. It's how you're managing the stress in your life.
What is strength eating? And you've got that as part of your subtitle of Get Off Your Sugar.
Yeah, well, we all know what stress eating is. I mean, it's our urge to soothe our physical bodies and our minds with food. But here's the problem. When we're under stress, the first thing we reach for is usually the worst thing that we reach for, things like fast food or junk food or what we call comfort food. And not only won't any of that food relieve your mental stress, your physical stress, it's going to actually increase it. Because comfort foods, it might make you feel better in that moment, that instant gratification maybe, but the problem is that those foods, they're acidic, they're driving up inflammation, and they're only stressing out your system more. Now, most people would assume that the alternative to stress eating is to not eat, but not eating is not an option because we have to eat, right? So the solution is strength eating, and this concept is pretty simple. At mealtime, if you're eating three meals a day, or if you're intermittent fasting, you're eating two meals a day, or you're having a snack, whenever you feel hungry, you want to eat the foods that strengthen your body, foods that strengthen your energy, strengthen your immune system, they give you that immune resilience, strengthen your brain, strengthen your cardiovascular system. Those are the things that we got to focus on. And here's the best part. It's as delicious as it's nutritious. These foods are packed with flavor as they're packed with the same nutrients. They're all high in alkalinity, which is key. That's one of my big things. And that's why we also say that strength eating is about eating acid-kicking foods. So that's the thing. We got to just start to add more of those foods in, and you'll see it replace the bad stuff.
Now, you mentioned fruit. I happen to love fruit. I love a bowl full of raspberries, blueberries, blackberries in the morning with a little, you know, whipped cream on top of it, not a lot, just a little bit. What do you think?
I think how you're doing it is spot on, because here's what you're doing. And this is what I tell people. So the berries, like blueberries, I call them brain berries. They're so good for brain system health. You know, but those fruits that you're talking about do have some sugar. They do have
sure.
fructose. However,
but it's natural stuff, right?
Yeah, it's natural. It's packed with nature. It's packed with fiber. So that's why the worst thing we could do is drink fruit juice. So something like orange juice would be something that I say you got to avoid like the plague. It's the worst thing. In fact, calorie for calorie, orange juice has more fructose than cola. So you got to avoid the fruit juices because basically you're just drinking the sugar water. You took out, like you just mentioned, George, the innate intelligence that nature put into it, the fiber. But what I like what you did with your berries is that you added a fat. So something like an organic whipping cream, or what I like even better is a big scoop of coconut butter, and I'll dice up some mint and I'll put that on top of the berries. It's amazing because now you get all the upside and benefit of all the healthy nutrients in the fruit that you're eating. But what the fats do is they slow down how those sugars get metabolized, so it prevents your insulin from spiking. Remember what I said before?
That's right.
You don't want to be dumping the insulin into the blood because that's going to make us gain weight. It's going to age us prematurely. It's going to create inflammation. So just by combining a healthy fat, so if you're having a banana, 25% sugar, right? So a better option would be an avocado. But if you still love bananas, have a little raw almond butter with it. So now you have that healthy fat in the nut butter, which slows down how those sugars get metabolized. Now your body's getting the benefit of the minerals in the fruit, and you don't have that downside that we're talking about with the insulin spiking.
I love a couple spoonfuls a day of crunchy peanut butter.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Come on. Slap me around.
Let's talk about peanut butter. It's one of the, as I call it, it's one of the unusual suspects because as a kid I used to love it. But here's the problem with peanut butter. Peanut butter, by the way, is actually worse than peanuts. I'll tell you why in a second. But peanut butter is loaded with a fungus called aflatoxin. It's actually a cancer-causing fungus. In fact, I talk about this in the book.
Oh, great.
There's over 21 different forms of aflatoxin. By the way, corn has 25.
Hold on for a second, Daryl. We're at the break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about peanut butter, and we'll open up the phone lines. Folks, jump on board next on Coast to Coast AM.